Life. Table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect. Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Citizens.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum,
identity,
family,
home,
conscience,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
leisure,
health,
education,
progress,
culture,
human rights,
Charter Dana,
solidarity.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on Sastel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service on channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and with me today is Crystal Giesbrecht. Crystal is a member of the local Regina group of Amnesty International, but she is also an Amnesty International field worker. And we're going to talk about a trip she took in September to Mexico City to attend an event, I'm going to try my Spanish here, called Encuentro de Activismo. Activismo? Welcome, Crystal. And
thank you. Understand
that's a gathering of activists, right?
That's right, yeah. It was a conference that was held in Mexico City for a weekend in September. And it had featured guests from Paraguay, USA, Brazil, and Canada, Dominican Republic. So there was members from Amnesty International staff and volunteers and a lot of young people from Mexico City as well. A lot of students were there. So it was an opportunity for people to meet and make connections across the Americas and also to learn more about specific activism campaigns that we're working on.
Was it an Amnesty conference, or was it sort of separate from Amnesty?
Yeah, it was an Amnesty conference, and it was organized by Amnesty International Mexico. They took the lead and planned it, and then generously invited us to come and attend and be part of their event, and that was really exciting for us to have the opportunity to meet them and be part of it. And as well as just Amnesty members, they did have other local activists from Mexico City who were there in attendance as well.
That's great. How was your Spanish?
Not that good, but you know what? Actually, not good at all. I don't speak Spanish, though. That's my upcoming goal for the year. But they were really great with the translation. So some of the activists there were bilingual, and I had a couple women that sat with me, and they would simultaneously translate during the panels for me. So it was really good. And then I was part of a panel where I spoke to the group on the last day about the rights of Indigenous peoples. And my co-panelist spoke Spanish, but I spoke in English. Mm-hmm. And then someone translated. So as I got to the end of each slide, they would just repeat it in Spanish. And a lot of people there did speak English, too. So
I'm sure you'd feel kind of inspired at that point. And Spanish, this is something that... make some attempt to try and get some Spanish going in your life.
That's right, because I've been to Mexico a couple times before for tourism, and then going this time for activism, I'm really inspired to keep working on Mexican human rights issues and to keep connecting with activists there. And the language is a really big thing. And I've stayed in touch with some people that I met down there. We've been Facebooking and emailing and keeping in contact over the cases, but it would certainly be a lot easier if I spoke the language. So it's just trying to fit in the time to do my Spanish homework on top of my other activism.
Yeah, right. You've got lots of spare time. Yeah. I'm just wondering, the government's attitude towards human rights. You know, Mexico isn't exactly known for its human rights record. Was there a sort of a government presence there at all that you were aware of?
No, you know, this conference was actually held in a government building, just as the location. No one from government was there just to attend and listen, to my knowledge. I could be wrong about that. But it was certainly this conference that I attended was part of a bigger push and a bigger kind of attention-getting campaign in Mexico. So Alex Neve, who's the Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada, was already in Mexico before myself and the other volunteers got there to join him. And himself and the AI Mexico Secretary General, they had went to a prison and visited Angel Colon, who is a prisoner of conscience there. Mm-hmm. And they had been doing some other high-level meetings. And this was all around a report that recently came out about torture in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So while this conference was a gathering more of local activists and taking some grassroots action on these issues, it was part of a bigger trip that involved some higher level things that did get a bit of government attention. But there's certainly, you know, it's the kind of the tip of the iceberg for getting attention on issues of torture in Mexico.
I would imagine, and this is just me hypothesizing this, that at higher levels of government, they would be all in favor of human rights. But the further on down you go, down the food chain, the less sort of cooperation and stuff that you would find.
You know, I think I agree with you, and I suppose I don't have the evidence, but that's certainly what it seems. And that's certainly what we see, because countries will sign on to things like the optional protocol against torture, but then while it might be, and of course we need Canada to sign on, Canada has not signed on yet, but you'll see countries that can support human rights or in a general way will make statements saying they support human rights, but then the action and the safeguards aren't put into place on the ground to make sure that those rights get protected. And I think that's a lot of the thing in Mexico. And there's also issues that prevent other countries, like Canada, from speaking out about what's going on in Mexico, given that we're trade partners with NAFTA, and there's economic interests on both sides.
So do you think it's the economic interests that are making Canada sort of drag its feet when it comes? I wasn't aware that they hadn't signed this protocol against torture.
Yeah. So that's something that we're working on, actually, and that's a big current focus is to get to encourage Canada to sign on, and that's something that we're working on with this campaign to stop torture across. And this is something that Amnesty is doing, not just in Canada, but across the whole world, is to get countries to sign on to prevent the issues that lead to torture and to have a role in that, because it's not enough to say, oh, well, that doesn't happen in our own country, or that's not us, right? We saw the other day where Prime Minister Stephen Harper said that the report that was released about CIA's torture in the USA, well, that has nothing to do with Canada.
Well, I wish.
But it does.
Yeah.
And we are implicit in these things, and it can be, I think, a lot easier for countries like Canada to speak out if it's the Ukraine or it's Russia, things that are happening in those countries where when someone's a partner, there's all these political ties. And we haven't been, this country has not been vocal enough about speaking out about what's going on in Mexico, in my opinion.
Wasn't it Stephen Harper that said that we didn't have colonialism in our past?
I'm sure something to that effect, I don't remember the exact quote.
Yeah, it seems to me he actually said that, which it kind of suggests a basic ignorance, or I don't know, it's perhaps a little more, you know, they don't seem to say anything without thinking carefully about their agenda. You know, so
there's always an agenda when it comes to working on international issues, and it can be hard to look in the mirror and look at our own country's shortcomings as well. And I think that's why campaigns like this one to stop torture and the international work that's going on between Amnesty and the Americas is really helpful, because it raises the awareness on such a bigger scale, and it gets people speaking out in their own country and in other countries, and really mobilizes people to realize that it's not just at home. And then once it goes up another level of awareness, then that's when we sometimes see some action.
Right. Was there much talk of mining?
You know, a little bit. We did talk about that when we were down there, and it was interesting, because my role on the panel was I was one of a number of panelists who spoke about the rights of Indigenous peoples, and what I spoke about specifically was Canada, and I talked about a number of issues that affect Indigenous peoples here, and I talked about resource extraction and what's going on in Canada, but then my colleague also talked about what Canadian mining companies are doing abroad.
Right.
And it's the same thing that's happening in Mexico, in Indigenous communities, very similar to what we're seeing here in Canada. But it was so interesting to share this, because the activists there, this was kind of a surprise to them, because Canada does have this reputation like a human rights good guy. And We have issues here at home, especially regarding the treatment of First Nations people. And some of the Mexican activists that we talked to about this were quite surprised. And they came up to Kathy Price, who's the Latin America campaigner, and myself afterward, and said, "We didn't realize that that was in Canada too." So while the mining and the resource extraction wasn't a central focus of the conference, it was one of the things that we did discuss in the breakout groups. And
yeah, I think the reality is that our present government didn't develop our reputation as good guys in the human rights field, but they're gradually whittling it away.
Unfortunately, that's true. You know, the reputation that Canada once had as a defender of human rights and as a safe place to be is we are losing that. And now is a time when I think this country has the opportunity to step up and to be more of a leader in human rights.
I was just thinking of the Lubicon Cree. I'm trying to remember how many years that's been an issue here in Canada. And I'm not even sure, but I mean, that is basically what we're talking about here. Here is a group that has had its land taken. There was no treaty, and the provincial and federal governments just enabled the mining companies to just go in and destroy their land.
And, you know, and there's so many similar stories to the Lubicon, and that's one that's been such a huge deal for us with Amnesty here in Canada that we've worked on. But Grassy Narrows was similar. There was the proposed New Prosperity gold and copper mine, which did not go through, and Amnesty played a big role in that. But those issues are things that I talked about on that panel, and so similar to what they're seeing in Mexico. But something that was really interesting that was a part of that I should share with you, because this is a success story, is also on that panel was a man named Leonardo Gonzalez, and he's a leader of an Indigenous community in Paraguay called the Sayomaya. And their issue was they had been forced to live in temporary housing for 20 years on the side of a highway because their land was occupied by private owners, and they wanted to get their land back, but they were doing activism, and they involved Amnesty, and then Amnesty from other other branches in other countries got involved, and Leonardo was a leader who was instrumental in doing this. But from the time he was a child, they had been living in this temporary housing. So, and he was raising his own children this way, and you know, hadn't really a lot of people had grown up not seeing anything different
beside
a
highway.
Yes, exactly, and this intervention was successful, and they were granted their land back, and it was this huge win. So he was there talking about his story and showed a video of his people, and it was really, it was just so encouraging to everyone there, because they went through a tremendous struggle and a long, long wait, but they had, they were able to get their rights recognized at the end. And that thing that this one small indigenous community in Paraguay experienced had so many parallels to what indigenous communities elsewhere in the Americas are experiencing.
One of the things that Amnesty is really focusing on lately is their campaign against torture. So was that a major sort of topic there in Mexico?
Yeah, and you know, that was kind of the main reason for this gathering, was it coincided with the launch of the of this torture report, we call it. But the title of it is Out of Control, Torture and Other Ill Treatment in Mexico. And if anyone wants to look that up, the report is on the Amnesty website. It's really easy to read. It's really informative. But that report came out at the beginning of September, and then we went out, we went down to Mexico following. And this was kind of, this conference that I was at was an attempt to mobilize and decide what to do and plan some activism around that. And then, as I said before, Alex was there. They visited Angel, who had been a victim of torture in a Mexican prison, and they had some other meetings to try and get some of the work around that recognized, because Mexico just has a very, very serious problem with torture. So in this report, they illustrate how there's been a 600% rise in torture in Mexico, and the complaints of torture are just rising and have been rising every year. It was reportedly a drop this year, so hopefully that stays. But there have not been prosecutions or charges in these cases of torture, and we're seeing Amnesty's just worked on a number of cases from Mexico. So so this report and this conference and all of this together, I think, is part of a bigger picture of mobilizing on Mexico in the next coming years.
I have this scenario in my head that it seems to me that most of the nasty stuff happening in Mexico is along the northern border. Would that be true, or is it everywhere?
It's everywhere, you know. There's places certainly that might be where maybe there haven't been the level of violations, but we've worked on cases from a number of different states and different areas of Mexico. And there's another thing too that I learned a lot about at this conference was issues of migration. And you get people migrating across Mexico, and again, they're experiencing violence kind of along their journey. And yeah, it's just, unfortunately, it's there's been so much violence against women in border towns like Ciudad Juarez, but these other things we're seeing, torture and enforced disappearances, and it's just happening everywhere.
So is there this whole idea of migrating to the United States, is that large in the populace in Mexico itself? Like, it seems to be a problem that is a big deal for the states. You know, they're having major problems with it in Washington. But is that the reality? Or you would think that there'd be a lot of people that just want to stay in their own country.
Yeah, and I don't think it's that everyone is trying to get out, certainly, but some people who are faced with such dire circumstances, living in poverty, don't have employment opportunities, or sometimes people that aren't even originally from Mexico, but might be from other Latin American countries. And for some people, their best shot at making money might be to try to get to the U.S., even if they're working under the table. So while it might not be, you know, a big percentage of the population, It's a large number of people that do travel through Mexico and try to cross the border every year, and the violence and the risk that people face is just horrendous, because they can be captured, they can be detained, put into prison, not tortured if they don't have access to a lawyer, don't have funds. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened to Angel Colon, who was from the Dominican, or he was Honduran. Mm-hmm. and he was trying to migrate, and really, people who are traveling without paperwork, without mm-hmm. passports, mm-hmm. without visas, you're so open
yeah.
to risk.
Right. Yeah, you just don't want to. You see a policeman, you go the other way, kind of mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah,
for sure.
and that's been people's experience, and I mean with good reason too. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because as Amnesty, we've worked on so many cases where law enforcement has been involved in torture and in forced mm-hmm. disappearances and arbitrary detentions, where people have been treated horribly, and that's something to remember. While certainly not all law enforcement in Mexico is bad, there's been such this culture of tolerance and impunity where it has been allowed to go on. Of course, people are terrified, and it is very possible that, you know, law enforcement can lock people up, accuse mm-hmm. them of things they didn't do, force them to sign a confession. It might get thrown out of court
right.
later.
Yeah.
But, you know, and we've been seeing that more and more.
I suppose that's one thing we kind of all have to learn from, is that you have to be, what's the word, sort of intolerant about any human rights abuse, because if you let the little stuff slide, it just escalates into stuff that's bigger.
Mm-hmm. And that's right. I think that is important for countries to take a stand for human rights mm-hmm. and against torture and other ill treatment, and to be really firm about that those cases will be prosecuted. And that's what happens. So in Mexico, when you have all of these thousands of cases of torture, 7 torturers have been prosecuted at the state level. Mm-hmm. So of course there's a culture of impunity, and of course it's allowed to go mm-hmm. on. But yeah. I think that's what, when you were talking before about the different levels of government, that's what needs to happen, where at a higher level, at the national level, you need to make sure that these things are punished when they go on at the state and local levels.
Let's talk about the case of Brenda and Hector Rangel Ortez.
Yes. Yeah. So this is something that's just really, it's a important story to talk about because of what happened. And it's also, it's empowering as well. So Hector Rangel Ortiz was traveling with two of his colleagues, and they were driving along, and they were pulled over by municipal police. Mm-hmm. And I believe when the police pulled them over, Hector knew. And often when you get pulled over, right, you might get falsely accused of something. And he got pulled over, and he called his sister Brenda, and he said, "The police have us pulled over right now." And he was never heard from again.
Ah.
This was 5 years, 1 month ago. It was November 2009 that this happened, and there was just nothing. There was no action. A proper investigation wasn't conducted. Hector was never found. He just vanished after that contact with the police. And Brenda, his sister, and as well as other members of the family, they have been so incredibly vocal. So they just have not stopped trying to get attention for this case. They have recently, just the last month, got a big billboard mm-hmm. downtown with Hector's picture and all his information on it. They're doing flyers, they go to meetings, they meet with government officials, they've formed this coalition of family members of the disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And Brenda herself has just been put in such a high degree of danger because of her activism. So And a quote from her that she said was, "I will carry on searching for my brother, even if it costs me my life."
Wow.
And, you know, it very likely could.
Yeah.
She, I met her. So she came for a meeting with us when we were down in Mexico City. So myself and my colleagues had the opportunity to sit down and talk to her. And she has a baby who's, he's less than a year old now, but when she was pregnant with him, she went outside and there was someone in her yard with a gun. Mm-hmm. She's received threats. She's been told from high level people, just drop it. Don't pursue this anymore. You know, it's best to just let it go. And she won't. Mm-hmm. She is just out there talking to the media and meeting with people and on social media and doing everything every day. And she's just put herself at such enormous risk. And we, Amnesty International, had a call out for a proper investigation into Hector's disappearance back when this happened. And then again last year, Amnesty International did an urgent action calling for protection for Brenda.
Right.
And then when we met her this fall, we realized that is still a very, very urgent need, and that she still could be in a lot of danger. So it's that's something that we've been taking action for here. And I just think this is so important, because while Hector is kind of a prominent face of this issue because of Brenda and how active she's been, he is just an illustration of the problem. Mm-hmm. There are so many enforced disappearances, and that's what she keeps saying, is this is not an isolated incident. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is happening all the time, and attention needs to be paid. So what we're doing here in Canada is, and Jim, you were part of this when our group did it, we made a bunch of signs with messages in English and Spanish with Hector's photo and Brenda's photo on them, and we've been taking pictures of people holding these photos, sharing them on social media, and we've also sent them to Brenda so that she has them. Mm-hmm. We've sent them to other groups in Canada, and then other groups in Canada are doing the same photo action. And this is really important to do because it shows solidarity and it encourages Brenda to be strong and keep going. Mm-hmm. But it also shows people and the authorities in Mexico that people in Canada know Brenda. We are watching her. We're in contact with her.
Right.
We hope that sends a message that if something happens to her, we're going to notice.
Right.
Yeah. It also sends a message that we want to see justice in Hector's case, and we're going to keep pursuing this. So I think it's really important to get that international attention for these things, because sometimes that's the push that's needed in Mexico when they realize the publicity's not going to go away, that then they have to, they might maybe put a little more attention, because she hasn't been easy to just shut up, and she's not going to.
Yeah, and it sort of begs the question, why wouldn't they want to go and find out? You know, why wouldn't they? You know, that's the thing it's tough to understand.
Probably because authorities are involved, you know, and I think that's a lot of what's happened is that you can't properly investigate a case if law enforcement was responsible for the enforced disappearance in the beginning. So what do you do? Now you can't bring a perpetrator to justice. Now you can't properly release what happened. So you have to just hope someone drops it.
Yeah.
And so there has been kind of a new, perhaps, development in this case. But because of all this action around Hector, there was recently something in the media that said there was a break in the case, like something was solved. But no one has contacted the family.
Right.
They have heard nothing of this. So is it true or not? I mean, this, again, could be sort of a play by the authorities to kind of settle it down and quiet it down a bit. So that's it. People have such a mistrust of the authorities that no one knows what's true information. And with that, when the authorities are implicit in many of these disappearances, there's just no way to investigate it properly. And then, of course, it'll look bad for the state government and the local government and
human nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour. So I think what we're going to do here is have a break. And we've got some music that... I think you said, was that the stuff that Kathy Price suggested? Or was this your...
Yes, this is a song that was suggested to me by Kathy Price, who is the Latin America campaigner for Amnesty International. And this musician, his name is Kike Escamilla, and we chose him because he was born and raised in Chiapas, Mexico, and he now lives in Toronto. And this song is called Ni Uno Más, which means not one more. And this is really fitting because of our discussion of disappearances in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a hashtag recently that's hashtag Ni Uno Más desaparecido, not one more disappearance. Right, yeah. So because of that, we thought that this song was really fitting for today's mm-hmm. discussion.
Okay, we're going to go our break first, and then after the break, we will go to Ni Unos Mas, and so that'll be just in a moment.
No!
forward and upward here. We are going to talk about Ayotzinapa. Did I say that right?
Ayotzinapa.
Okay.
Come on. Yeah, and you know, this is something that's really important to talk about. It's a crucial time right now for attention on Mexico and for work on this issue. So the teacher training students that this issue, for people who aren't aware, teacher training students from this school, they often come into the city from the rural area where they live, and they ask for donations, and they get money that helps to fund their education. They disappeared. Their bus was pulled over by police. They were one student disappeared, and then this happened again, and the rest disappeared, and there had been 43 students missing. This happened the week after I returned from my trip to Mexico City, and this has been an ongoing human rights concern. And recently, one of the students' remains was identified, and they continue to work on that. But this, it'll be a long process of closure for the families and understanding exactly what did go on. But this is, it's a real time right now to be focusing on Mexico and what's going on down there. So the families of the disappeared students, they continue to mobilize and to keep demanding justice and to keep demanding that this is investigated and that it doesn't happen anymore. Because the whole activism and the whole message around Ayotzinapa has been that this is not an isolated case. There have been so many disappearances. And just before we went on the radio, Jim and I were looking at this infographic we saw on the Telegraph from the UK. And it shows that over 5,000 people have disappeared in Mexico this year, the worst year for enforced disappearances.
That's incredible.
22,610 since 2007. The scope of the enforced disappearances is just absolutely unbelievable. And this group of students has brought it to light, but it's been happening all over Mexico. It's been happening in the past. And this group of students or students from the school had actually suffered attacks in the past as well.
So is the scale of that kind of attack a little unusual?
You know, I think for 43 to be missing is unusual, because oftentimes it's been, you know, one person or a small group of people.
Right.
So so that I think has helped to raise the awareness, and people have mobilized around that, which of course, as we've been seeing in the news, there's been protests and there's been more violence and there's been more arrests, and it's a really difficult situation. But now is a time when the world is watching Mexico, and we can be part of the mobilization to call for change and call for something different to happen there.
I was just thinking maybe we could ask Stephen Harper to talk to the president of Mexico about this, because he is, you know, a champion of human rights. And I don't see why he couldn't bring that up in conversation.
Well, I agree with you, and that's what's important, is when we do activism on these things, it works really well for us as Canadians to not only contact the president and the government of Mexico, mm-hmm. but to also talk to our own government and encourage them to take action. Because Canada has a real interest in Mexico, being that we're trading partners, mm-hmm. and our geographic proximity, and a lot of reasons why Mexico would listen, mm-hmm. if Canada were to intervene and to say something. And actually, something that's really, really important right now is collecting signatures on the petitions. And there's a petition, one that goes to Mexico and one that goes to Minister John Baird. Mm-hmm. And so what we want is people to get those petitions and get signatures on them and then send those into Ottawa and they'll be delivered. But as Amnesty International members, we know that that's really effective. A big stack of petitions with signatures from mm-hmm. real people. It shows that people in Canada are taking notice, and people around the world are taking notice, because people are really mobilizing for this everywhere. But that's what we hope, is people who are listening to the show today will hopefully access that. Mm-hmm. And there's an online action that you can take. It's an e-petition. It takes just a couple seconds to sign it. And there's also the petition you can print out and, you know, take it on your coffee break, get your coworkers to sign a lunch, carry it around with you, because every signature helps. And it really goes a long way to demonstrate the scope of this. But that is really easy to find. It's amnesty.ca/Mexico students. So if people are interested in this case, that's a place to go and get that information. And there's other things people can do, too. So I was talking about the photo actions that our group had done for Brenda and Hector. We also did do a photo action calling for justice when the teacher training students first disappeared. And things like that are really, really important to keep doing for all the reasons we've been saying. But it shows that there's attention on this from Canada. It shows that people are paying attention. And it has the benefit of using the hashtags and putting these things on social media. It shows the activists in Mexico, and it's really important for them to get those shows of solidarity from outside the country, because they need to know that other people are watching Mexico. And then, of course, it shows Canadians that we're watching and that this is important, too.
Yeah, it seems incredible, you know, from our perspective, that this sort of thing goes on. But the reality is it does. And it also makes you wonder how our own government can ignore what's going on, but I guess they can. So it's important for us to make people like John Baird know that we are paying attention and we do expect better behavior from their trading partners.
That's absolutely right, because it really is a human rights crisis in Mexico right now, with the 600% increase in torture and this increase in enforced disappearances. And we know, too, that that one of the students who had been disappeared in September was found, he had been horribly tortured. And this case, again, is really a convergence of these issues that we're concerned about. But now is a time when there's just so much danger and so much uncertainty in Mexico. And as Canadian citizens, we can really work on our government to play a lead role in this, which they have the ability to do and the responsibility to do.
A lot of people travel to Mexico, you know, to escape the cold weather. Do they have anything to worry about?
You know, not, well, I don't know. Some people would tell you perhaps Mexico is unsafe, and I think everyone has to really, you know, judge their own plan depending on where they're traveling and what they plan to be doing. I wouldn't recommend against going to Mexico. Mm-hmm. What I think and what a campaign that Amnesty's been doing is not to dissuade people from Mexico, but to try to get people informed about what the issues are. Mm-hmm. Because you want to know what's going on in a place you visit, and you want to be part of the change and part of doing something positive. Mm-hmm. So people who are listening might have seen this campaign. It's really quite effective and very inventive. Is Amnesty International Canada made a provocative ad campaign called the Last Chance Travel Club. Mm-hmm. And the tagline is, think winter is torture, think Mexico. Right. And you go to this website and it's the Last Chance Travel Club, and it's got information, you know, thinking of Mexico this winter. And and it looks at first glance like a travel website, but the phone number has torture in it. The letters spell out. And if you click on it, click on the different parts of the website, it's giving you all the information about what's going on in Mexico with the rates of torture and what people there are experiencing. And the bottom line of this whole campaign is not to discourage Canadians from traveling to Mexico, but to tell people that while they're thinking about going to the beaches and visiting the archaeological sites and meeting all the people that are just absolutely fantastic and wonderful, is to know what's really going on so that we can speak up about it when we come home, before we go, and to be part of the voice. Because Mexico is, we have so much in common. We frequently travel there as, you know, as Canadians, and we work in partnership with Mexico. And we need to really know the reality of what's happening there so that we can speak up on behalf of our neighbors.
I'm just looking at our notes here, and here's another case, Claudia Medina Tamares?
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. Claudia was another woman who I was just so fortunate and honored to meet while I was in Mexico. And Claudia's story, again, is somewhat of a success, but it also, again, highlights the really extreme problems with torture in Mexico. So Claudia was arrested. Soldiers came into her home at night. Her children were there. They accused her of drug offenses, hauled her away, and held her in the base. And she was sexually assaulted. She was horribly tortured. And while they were holding her and subjecting her to this torture, they told her she had to confess or they would get her children and do the same to them. Of course, they know where she lives. They've seen her children. They arrested her from her own home. So Claudia was eventually forced to sign this confession that she didn't even read. Mm-hmm. And then she was released. You know, she was let go at the end of this ordeal. But what's so important here is that she has not been silent. Mm-hmm. She is talking to human rights groups. She's doing interviews. She's just out there so much talking about what happened to her. And mm-hmm. what she went through is just not, it's just not an easy thing to have to keep publicly telling and retelling.
But something like that, what, does she have any idea what caused it in the first place? Why was she was targeted?
Why they targeted her specifically, I don't know, and I don't think that Claudia knows. Mm-hmm. The accusation was drug charges, mm-hmm. and she, I do not believe that she's involved in drugs. They didn't have evidence, and you know, of course, they let her go because sure. of this lack of evidence. But sometimes what happens is there's pressure for law enforcement to crack down on the drug cartels, to sure. do some drug arrests. Well, if they themselves are involved, perhaps, mm-hmm. or, right, if there haven't been arrests, perhaps they want to get some numbers in the books.
So they just pick somebody out of the phone book.
Yeah, and who knows, right, how they pick people, but it definitely mm-hmm. happens where someone's driving down the street, get pulled over at a stop sign or a red light or something like that. And then, mm-hmm. oh, we got to search your car for drugs. Oh, we found something. They get taken in. And then often people are tortured, held without charges, not allowed reasonable contact with a lawyer, all of that. And then forced to sign something that they don't agree to, don't mm-hmm. understand, or probably didn't even read.
Right.
And then when they're released, the charges are often disappear because sometimes with Claudia, some of her charges actually still remain, but mm-hmm. there's no evidence. And these things often, then they get thrown out, but the damage is done. Mm-hmm. And it also serves this function of creating a culture of fear because people are terrified. They know that if they protest or they speak up or they're out on the street or doing whatever, hey, you mm-hmm. could be falsely accused,
right.
tortured, forced to sign, and then released. So it kind of works to serve the purpose to keep people afraid. Mm-hmm. And people like Claudia and Brenda and all the protesters around Ayotzinapa and all of these cases, people know that they can very easily mm-hmm. be hauled in and forced to sign a confession.
Sure.
So with Claudia, she's been extremely brave to keep speaking out. Mm-hmm. And Amnesty did some work with asking for justice in her mm-hmm. case and bringing awareness to that. And when we met her, we went down there and we took this banner that had been made by Amnesty International volunteers in Toronto. They painted it. It was all handprints. Mm-hmm. And it was this really beautiful big banner of showing a message of solidarity to her. And so we went and we gave that to her. And she was so happy. She said she was going to hang this in her room so she could look at it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we filmed this video where Claudia tells her story. And of course, she's speaking Spanish in mm-hmm. the video, so that'll be subtitled mm-hmm. and it'll be up on the Amnesty Canada website soon.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another video on there already of Claudia. Her name is Claudia Medina Tamariz, and that's on the Amnesty Canada website if people are interested in hearing her tell her story. But it's just extremely powerful. And I think this is so important to talk about women like Claudia and Brenda and all these other activists because mm-hmm. they put themselves in such an incredible amount of danger every day to do this and to keep working. and just tirelessly campaigning. So for us, if we can take some photo actions and write some letters and stay in touch with them and stay in touch with our own government, you know, doing those small things that we can do on our end, it's really not that much when you look at what the human rights defenders there are going through.
Yep, come on down to Atlantis on Tuesdays.
Exactly. Come write letters with us.
One other question I had for you, I just wondering if there was much participation by local lawyers, human rights lawyers, in this conference. Were they in evidence at the conference?
You know, good question, and I don't think I have a proper answer for you. There may have been some. There was people who attended from Mexican local human rights activist groups and organizations, so there were some of those staff people attending. I don't know if any of them were lawyers, though. But we were also in contact, and my colleagues more so than me, with some Mexican groups. The one that that defended Claudia and provided her legal counsel, we went down to their building and had the meeting with her there. And there's been communication between them and Amnesty, so so there's some connection there.
Yeah, I'm just curious, because of course we have some lawyers here in our country that concentrate on human rights, and and then, you know, the experience in other countries where lawyers spend a lot of time with human rights. And generally speaking, their lives aren't easy either. You know, if you're a human rights lawyer, for example, in Iran, then things can get really difficult for you if you pick that route.
Yes, exactly. And we've heard things like that from Mexico and other countries, where people that are working for these nonprofits that are providing legal counsel for prisoners of conscience or people that have otherwise been, you know, victims of human rights abuses, some of those lawyers and those NGO staff are receiving threats. And again, their buildings don't always have a sign. You know, sometimes they're kind of trying to keep things quiet, but the threats still get there, and you can still find where their building is. And again, they put themselves in a lot of danger just to go to work and to do that. So, again, it's really admirable, and that, I think it's encouraging for all of the volunteers on the ground here, the people, you know, on the legal side of it in Canada, but just all the volunteers to know what these people are doing every day.
It's really kind of incredible. I guess what gets me, what would happen if this wasn't, if we didn't have conferences like this, you know, where would we be?
Yeah, you know, I think it's so important to do that, because if you don't communicate outside of your, you know, your city and your town and your province and your country, you don't realize that there's similar issues. Just like all the things with the rights of Indigenous peoples, that it was like, wow, we didn't know you experienced that too. Right. And they experienced it in Paraguay, and they experienced it in Guatemala. And, and all of that is, you're stronger when you realize that you're in it together and there can be common solutions. And just for the solidarity and the action, because, okay, maybe this is an Indigenous community, this Sayamaya in Paraguay, but then when you get Amnesty Paraguay and then Amnesty in other countries speaking out, okay, it's harder to ignore now, right? So,
and there's some common denominators along there too. For example, Canadian mining companies, you know, they're doing it to us here, and they're also doing it in various countries in South America and Central America, and, you know, so if we concentrate there.
That's right. And you need to kind of have that information of what's happening at home, what's happening abroad, and how do those pieces fit so that you can work to change that, so you can work against it and make sure that those organizations and individuals that are violating human rights are brought to justice. And you need the information, and you need that, the communication and that good research to make that happen.
Yeah, and that is showing some progress, actually. I think, isn't there an action against Hudbay that's it's right in the middle of court action right now? So we'll see how that works.
Yes, exactly.
We've come to the end of the hour, Crystal.
All right. It's been fun, Jim.
It has. As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, founder of Amnesty International, said, "Only when the last prisoner of conscience has been freed, the last torture chamber has been closed, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights is a reality for the world's people, will our work be done."
This is the Talent Pool on 91.3 FM, CJTR, a look at Regina's live music scene.
At the Lancaster Tap House, Fridays are Big Chill Friday with lounge beats from Regina's hottest DJs. On Saturday night, catch Little Chicago live on stage at the Lancaster Tap House, 4529 Gordon Road. At McNally's Tavern Friday night, Tequila Mockingbird. And on Saturday, reggae from Saskatoon's The Steadies, McNally's Tavern, 2226 Dewdney Avenue. And the Regina Blues Association presents the 21st Annual Midwinter Blues Festival, February 26th through 28th. Three nights at three venues, including two all-ages nights. Tickets by phone, online, or at Casino Regina box office. And get the complete lineup and more at reginablues.ca.
This has been the Talent Pool on 91.3 FM, CJTR, Regina Community Radio.
91.3 FM, CJTR, Regina Community Radio. Our programming is made possible by community-minded organizations like the City of Regina and by listeners like you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Putumayo World Music Hour, a journey around the globe through the music of many cultures. In San Francisco, I'm Rosalie Howarth, along with Dan Storper in New Orleans. And today we're going mountain climbing. We're exploring some of the musical styles that originate in the higher elevations.
We'll start in Jamaica, a country that very few people think of as a mountainous region. But the world's most expensive coffee is grown on the slopes of Jamaica's Blue Mountains.
Ernest Ranglin is going to start us off with a great instrumental piece called Below the Baseline.
Baba wakambo sitaweza kamwe kuvumilia, sitaweza kamwe kuvumilia. Amekuwa hanijali hata kwa maradhi, usiku na mchana yuwa nikemea. Hata kimie nende shule
sababu si mwanawe. Hata kimi enende shule, sababu si mwanawe. Mama tafadhali nipeleke kwa baba. Mama nakuomba unipeleke